which is Hernandez Clavel versus the people. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Alan Kratz. I represent the petitioner in this case, Mr. Hernandez Clavel. This case presents this court with the issue of whether it is permissible for a court, a sentencing court, to effectively create a rule that a defendant who is otherwise a prime candidate for probation is nonetheless ineligible and must receive a sentence to the Department of Corrections where there is the possibility that he will be deported upon conviction. Mr. Hernandez pled guilty to a single count of theft by receiving a nonviolent property offense. The record shows that he was a prime candidate for probation. He was well educated. He had no prior criminal history up to this offense. He had been in this country for approximately 5 years, and during that time had maintained a stable employment history. He also indicated that he had a job waiting for him if released on probation. The court nonetheless rejected probation and sentenced Mr. Hernandez to 2 years in the Department of Corrections. Addressing defense counsel's concern that Mr. Hernandez was being treated differently solely on the basis of his status as an undocumented alien, the court compared its decision to statutory provisions which set forth circumstances where a person is ineligible for probation, such as the two felony rule. And this finding by the court raises a critical point in this case. That is that the determination as to whether someone is eligible for probation has been and is a legislative prerogative. The General Assembly has enacted statutory provisions which provide when a defendant is ineligible for probation, such as the two felony rule and the prohibition against offenders who have been convicted of crimes of violence. The General Assembly has not enacted any statutory provision which provides that those offenders who are subject to deportation upon conviction are thereby rendered ineligible for probation. In fact, section 18.1.3.104.1a states that the defendant may be granted probation unless any provision of law makes him or her
ineligible. Well, the standard here is abuse of discretion, isn't it? I mean, the way you phrase it is interesting to me. The trial court created a rule. Of course, the only rule that the trial court could do is one applicable to itself. Since it doesn't have rulemaking authority, and the question is, should I put this person on probation or send them to DOC? So,
yes, I guess what I was meaning to say is that the trial court had a rule for its court for the way it considered the circumstance. The court basically compared a person who's subject to deportation with these statutory provisions, which clearly, in my mind, suggested that the court regarded that fact as making the person ineligible.
Yeah, but isn't the court looking at whether this person is going to be, you know, successfully rehabilitated in the community through probation outside of DOC? And if there's this other circumstance here, it's likely that the person would not receive that supervision. Therefore, the policy of the General Assembly would be, you know, and the discretion in the trial court to send the person to DOC. I don't see why that isn't just what happened.
Well, I think that if I understand your question correctly, first of all, the policy of the General Assembly as set forth in its statutory provisions does not state that a person who is subject to deportation is ineligible for probation. So the General Assembly has not indicated that it believes such a person would inevitably...
Well, another court could put probation on there and hope the person isn't deported or not take that into account. So I just don't know why we're not being asked to interfere with sentencing discretion that trial court needs to exercise.
Well, I think the problem, Your Honor, is that the court here is speculating about the actions of some other sentencing authority, if you will. And it is speculation and conjecture because the state court is not in a position to know the ultimate outcome of federal removal proceedings. As stated in the briefs, federal immigration law is very complex. It's by no means a certainty that a defendant who receives a state court conviction will ultimately be deported. An offender in federal deportation proceedings has certain due process rights, his right to hire an attorney, his right to present a defense. There are equitable considerations that sometimes come into play. So the problem here is that the trial court is basing its decision on speculation about a future proceeding and merely making an assumption that may or may not prove to be true, that the defendant will be deported and for that reason be unable to comply with his probationary term. And for that reason, this case is analogous to cases like Lucero, where this court basically approved of the reasoning in a court of appeals case, Flower. And in Flower, the district court there ordered a sentence to be served consecutively to an as yet unimposed sentence in another case. And the Court of Appeals held that this was an improper consideration, obviously because the sentencing court was not in a position to know what that sentence would be in that other case, and therefore was speculating that it would be such that the sentence in the current case should be imposed consecutively. Well, that's analogous to this case. The sentencing court is speculating that this defendant is going to be deported, probably, and for that reason, he's probably not going to be able to comply with conditions of probation, not due to any circumstances surrounding his character or not due to the seriousness of the offense, but solely due to the fact that he'll be, in the court's words in this case, whisked away, probably, by federal immigration officials.
Mr. Kratz, can I ask you, I'm under the impression, maybe this is wrong, that part of the, at least a partial reason, was that he didn't have the ability to work legally, that he wouldn't.
The court did make that statement, yes.
Is that accurate? Is that inaccurate? I understand
Your Honor, as I understood the court's statement, it was that he's not going to be able to work because he's going to be deported, probably. That was the court's reasoning. And so that's really just making the same speculation, in my view, that, well, probably this defendant will be deported by immigration officials, and therefore he's not going to be able to be legally in this country and work. Obviously, if the court's assumption is incorrect, if the federal immigration officials determine that he will not be deported, then presumably he would be in this country legally and could work, and had in fact had a job waiting for him, according to his statements.
Could I ask, before you get back on point,
sure,
Mr. Kratz, when your initial statement about the statutory standards, is there any suggestion on your part that the judge misunderstood his authority to grant probation or thought that he was somehow statutorily barred because of the defendant's potential for being deported?
I don't think the answer to that question is clear based on the court's findings, Your Honor. He definitely compared his decision to those kinds of statutory prohibitions. He didn't come out and state, I think I'm statutorily prohibited from granting probation in this case.
So you're not arguing that this is not a question of discretion, but rather one in which the judge simply misunderstood the law. That's not the thrust of your argument?
I think it's possible he misunderstood the law, but it can't be definitively. You can't definitively make that conclusion from his findings. The other possibility is that he was merely stating, here in my court, I don't grant probation to people who are subject to deportation. And that wouldn't necessarily mean that he's saying, I think I'm statutorily barred from doing it. It's just that I always exercise my discretion this way.
Let me ask one follow-up based on that. If he is exercising his discretion, then is the thrust of your argument to say that it would be an abuse of discretion to deny probation on the grounds that the court felt there was a likelihood the defendant would not remain in his jurisdiction or subject to his supervision?
Well, Your Honor, it's my argument that, first of all, as I've stated, the statutes don't prohibit probation for someone who's subject to deportation. And yes, this is the kind of speculative sentencing consideration that this court has disapproved of in the past, that the court is basically speculating, conjecturing that you are going to be deported probably, and for that reason, you'll no longer be able to comply with the conditions of probation. And the problem, of course, is that the court doesn't really have a knowledge of whether that's going to happen or not. It's foreclosing probation based on its prediction about an uncertain future proceeding.
And if it's the speculation or the unpredictability of what might happen that's at issue, then does it make any difference, in your opinion, that it's something over which the defendant would have no control? Or would it be the same situation if the judge felt that this person was a flight risk, would you know, move to the Bahamas or something and flee from probation? Would those not be the same type of situation? They'd each be an attempt to predict on the part of the court what's going to happen.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not arguing that a court can never make predictions about what might happen if the defendant were given, say, a probationary term. What I am arguing, though, is that this court's decisions have consistently indicated that those predictions must be based on existing information in the record about circumstances surrounding the offender or perhaps the seriousness of the offense. So, for example, I think it's clear that if the pre-sentence report stated that the defendant had previously received a probationary term and had not successfully completed that term, that would be information the court could consider in predicting that the defendant would probably not comply with the conditions of probation this time either. But that, my argument is that that's not the case here. Rather, what the court was saying was that through no fault of your own, you will likely be deported. And for those reasons, you won't be able to comply with the conditions.
That's an interesting framing of that. Through no fault of your own, you're going to be deported. I mean, no. He's in the country illegally.
Well, what I mean in that sense is that it's not based on any criminal conduct that he committed while in this country. It's based upon the fact that he is in this country as an undocumented worker. Basically, the continued presence of someone in the U.S. is not a federal crime. And therefore, although it means that a person is deportable, it does not mean that they have committed any federal crime. And I think that the mere fact that someone is an undocumented alien, well, first of all, the court here didn't find that, well, because you're an undocumented alien, I think you're a poor candidate for probation, that you would likely violate the conditions of probation. The court didn't make those kinds of findings. The court said, well, I think it's likely the federal immigration officials will deport you. And for that reason, you won't be able to complete a probationary sentence. At any rate, I think the very premise of that reasoning is somewhat objectionable, that, well, obviously the vast majority of undocumented people in this country live productive, law-abiding lives. And so that fact alone says very little, if anything, about their ability to comply with conditions of probation. But I'm not sure this court has to get into that because...
Well, I wouldn't think so either, because the court has in front of it the nature of this illegal activity. And it seemed to me there were other incidents in other states. I'm not sure.
This was his first felony conviction, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay.
For the sake of full disclosure, the pre-sentence report did have in there a statement that he had been convicted of a prior illegal entry. He denied that at the sentencing hearing. He said that was someone else. And the sentencing court never indicated that it considered that circumstance in denying probation.
Counsel, can it be put, before you move on down here in the end, could you help me understand, do you see any role at all for consideration of immigration status? I'm trying to figure out, I think your position here is that it was improper to consider it in this case, and I'm wondering if you could help me understand, would there be any situation that you would see that it would be proper to consider that in a probation determination? Or is it just inherently speculative in all cases?
I think it's clearly speculative in a case where the court is just saying, as here, I think the result of this federal proceeding, if one even occurs, is that you'll probably be deported and therefore you'll be unable to serve a probationary term. I can't say that obviously there could be lots of different types of cases. There may be cases where the defendant admits to having committed federal immigration crimes, for example. That might be a case where...
Well, I'm trying to figure out, though, in terms of the possibility of deportation, do you think you need to have the deportation order already issued, or when could you possibly consider that?
Well, clearly, under your hypothetical, if a deportation order has already been issued, I think the court would be quite safe in concluding you're not going to be able to comply with a probationary term under those circumstances. Of course, then the question would be whether, and I don't know the answer to this, whether the defendant would be deported immediately or would have to serve some sentence to incarceration if that was imposed. I think under that hypothetical, yes, that would be a proper consideration.
Thank you.
Your time has expired.
Thank you. Just ask that the Court of Appeals judgment be reversed. Thanks.
May it please the Court, Karina Garrity representing the people of the state of Colorado, registration number 34931. I would like to begin by clarifying the people's position on the standard of review, and I apologize for not setting this forth more artfully in my brief. But as a discretionary determination, the grant or denial of probation is not subject to appellate review pursuant to statute. So the issue is not whether the trial court abused its discretion. And we're not here today to consider the propriety of the sentence in this case, the weighing of sentencing considerations, or the sufficiency and accuracy of the information relied on. The issue is, as a matter of law, whether the possibility of deportation can ever be considered in evaluating a probationary sentence. So it's not that a court would have to deny probation on this basis, but whether a court can ever consider this. And here, the trial court recognized and entertained the possibility of probation, but it made an individualized determination that it wouldn't be appropriate because of the risk of no rehabilitation, no punishment, and no restitution. But there's no indication, a fair reading of the record would not indicate, that the court believed that there was a categorical exemption or that it misapprehended the range of sentencing options to include the possibility of probation.
Ms. Gary, perhaps you can explain to me, I won't keep you too long on standard of review, but what you said initially here seems to me, unless I misunderstood your brief, differs from the brief. So I wonder if you could explain to me why it is that we do not review for abuse of discretion here.
Well, under 18-103-104-1A, the legislature has made a determination that, and let me just find the specific language here. That appellate review of, and I'm not quoting, appellate review of trial court judgments granting or denying probation is statutorily prescribed under that provision.
Is non-reviewable?
It's non-reviewable, that's correct.
Okay.
Well, how does that fit with the cases that you cited to us in the brief indicating that the review standard is abuse of discretion? I mean, are you saying those cases are changed by that statutory rule? Or I'm not sure where you are here. But I guess let me first ask. I did correctly understand that you argued abuse of discretion in your brief, didn't I?
That is correct. And as I was preparing for the argument, okay, it became clear to me that we're really not talking.
Okay, so how do the cases that you cited, how do you reconcile them with the statute that you're now using as support for the we don't review on that basis?
As a general matter, sentences are reviewed for abuse of discretion. I don't believe that any of those cases refer specifically to probation.
Could you sum that? I'm sorry, I got lost on part of this. So what is your current position?
That we're not looking today at whether the trial court abused its discretion in this particular case. The issue is, as a matter of law, whether the possibility of deportation can ever be considered in evaluating a probationary sentence. And in Colorado, the sentencing inquiry is quite broad, and it's constrained only by specific statutory or constitutional limitations. And initially, we have no affirmative prohibition on this factor in either statute or constitution. Looking at the general sentencing and the specific probation statutes, the likely deportation is relevant to many statutorily enumerated factors, including rehabilitation, deterrence, and proportionate punishment. When it comes to the general sentencing inquiry, the overriding concern is, what is the most appropriate placement for this particular defendant given all the surrounding facts and circumstances? And for probation in particular, the idea is, can the defendant live successfully in the community under probationary supervision? And this involves factors such as the ability to maintain contact with a probation officer, the ability to be a law-abiding and contributing member of society, the ability to pay restitution, the presence of local support for the offender, whether the offender poses a flight risk. And all of these are legitimate probationary concerns. All are affected or relate to the idea of deportability, and all might cause a court to be worried about imposing a probationary sentence for an offender that's facing imminent deportation. Now, the speculative argument, I believe, misconstrues the nature of sentencing and the nature of a probationary sentence, because in Colorado, for felonies, prison is the default sentence, and probation is a special privilege. And for probation, the court must feel satisfied pursuant to statute that probation will serve justice and the public, and that this particular person is a worthy risk for a community sentence. And this requires the court to be concerned or to contend with uncertainties. And it involves the court's perception of the offender's prospective ability to comply with probationary conditions.
Ms. Garrity, I wonder if you could address one thing for me. I just find it a little bit strange that rejecting probation, the sentence that the court imposed then was Department of Corrections and parole. And it seems to me that the ability to complete parole is guided by many of the same considerations as the court may have considered as far as completing probation is concerned. That is, someone who might get deported is not likely to successfully complete parole to the same extent, I would think, is not likely to complete probation. How does that play into this? I mean, doesn't that, because my question is, doesn't that suggest that maybe the court wasn't as concerned about those factors as it indicated?
Well, parole is distinguishable from probation in that it comes after the service of a prison sentence, and it's designed to facilitate reintegration of the offender into the community. If an offender who faces a high likelihood of deportation is released on a probationary sentence, and they're immediately taken into the custody of immigration officials, then they're essentially going to serve no sentence.
So the consideration then, or the difference really, is the punitive nature of the sentence.
That is one consideration, and it was a consideration that bothered the trial court in this case, because here was an offender who had been involved in a chop shop for the theft of many different automobiles, and the court was concerned that there would be some punishment as a result of that, and that also goes to the individual deterrent aspect of.
With respect to the parole part of the sentence, is that mandatory parole?
I'm sorry?
With respect to the parole part of the sentence, was that a mandatory parole that was required by the statute?
That's correct.
Ms. Garrity?
Yes.
I certainly, I guess, hard to argue with generally what you said about probation and the judge's discretion, and we'll have to take a look at that statute. But it seems to me a fair reading of what the judge said in this case was this guy is going to be whisked away and he's subject to deportation. That was pretty clear. And we said deportation is a collateral consequence, and our cases say that. So it seems to me that the reasons he gives that he can't be punished because he's going to be whisked away, and he can't work because he's going to be whisked away, are totally about that he's going to be deported, which we said is a collateral consequence. And I think if you look at it a little more seriously, I think it is discriminating against him because of his status as an alien. So I wonder if you can reply to that argument.
Absolutely. I don't think the collateral consequences doctrine prevents consideration of this factor when it comes to probation. The collateral consequences doctrine comes out of a completely different context, and that's how a defendant should be advised prior to entry of the plea. It doesn't necessarily speak to what a sentencing court can consider in coming up with an appropriate individualized sentence for a particular offender. And I think
let me just interrupt just for a second.
Sure.
But it would have been much better if he'd said, I don't think you should get probation here because you're involved in this chop shop. You deserve punishment, DOC punishment. He didn't really say that. I mean, that you're right about the reasons. The underlying reason, it seems to me, is that he's being punished because he's in the country illegally. And that's status. And we said, at least some courts have said, the Ninth Circuit has said, that's unconstitutional.
Well, I just add on something, too, before you answer this series of questions. Didn't the judge start with wanting to put him in community corrections? And he said, well, he doesn't have a job. He can't get a job because he's here illegally. So then he went to probation or DOC, right?
Right. That's correct.
So could you comment on that as well when you answer our questions?
Okay. And I will try to answer all of the questions completely.
Sorry. Yes, thank you.
If I can remember them. To start with your question, yes, and this goes to the fact that the court didn't believe that probation was automatically not an option, because the court had the defendant evaluated for probation. The probation department decided that he wasn't an appropriate candidate. Nevertheless, the trial court can
not probation, for community corrections.
Yes, there okay. was also an evaluation for community corrections. Community corrections denied or rejected the defendant, and so then it was a matter of probation or prison. In terms of whether this is punishing the defendant for his status, initially this is a punishment for the crime committed. This gentleman admitted to committing a class 4 felony, and the sentence that was imposed on him was for the commission of that crime. It wasn't necessarily for his status. And this is
Here's my question. I'm over here. To some extent, status and his ability to be successfully placed on probation or community corrections are interrelated. Because of his status, he was not able to get a job. Now, I understand that Mr. Kratz's position is that he was, had a job, quote, waiting for him. But I also understand that community corrections said he couldn't work, and that seems to me to be a conflict in the record. Could you speak to that point, please?
I believe that he thought that he could get a job. It's a different matter whether he could work legally under the employment laws in this country.
The judge could take into account whether the defendant can work. I mean, that's obvious, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. The ability to work is just one factor that can be considered, and it's one factor that the likelihood of deportation encompasses. And even though the trial court doesn't have to impose the condition of work, it can be legitimately concerned with the ability to be a productive and law-abiding member of society, and I believe this includes employment laws.
Well, I guess I'm now become a little bit confused. Is someone who is an undocumented person in the United States, I mean, is it correct that that person cannot categorically work, or can those people legally work if they're undocumented? I'm just confused about that at this point.
And you'll have to forgive me because I'm not an expert on immigration law. But I believe that you would have to have some kind of documentation in order to work legally in the country.
So, at least according to federal law, if this person, this defendant were in the country and he had no documentation, he could not work. Is that your position?
Could not work legally.
Okay.
How important is that to your argument? I mean, I'm a little concerned that the way this argument comes down, I mean, at least in one view, that could be regarded as somewhat pivotal, and yet the answer from the record is probably the same as yours, which is the judge is making assumptions like you are rather than giving us any authority.
I think the court's reading the record at sentencing, I think the court's central concern was the defendant's presence to participate in probation, and that includes all the terms and conditions that may apply. Because if an offender is sent out of the country, then it doesn't matter what terms and conditions are put in place, there's going to be no participation in this program.
And there's no deterrent on folks in a similar circumstance not to commit the crime.
That's correct.
Which is maybe weighing on the court's mind, even though he didn't say it, I suppose. But still, when it comes right down to it, I mean, isn't Mr. Kratz correct that ordinarily this would be a case for probation if it were not for this circumstance, that he may be deported?
I'm sorry, the court didn't say as much when it sentenced this defendant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On behalf of the court, I thank both counsel.